Good morning. I am Pastor Emma. For those of you that have not met me, I'm not going to say anything about the weather because I'm very upset about it. John Miller will be delivering our message this morning, so I'm actually your celebration associate this morning, which is a fun role reversal for me. And our opening words this morning come from Brenda Hillman, In the Trance. A pretty anarchist said to me, "It's not that great love happens. What happened became your great love." Her echo had an ancient glow and so proved buoyant for my little craft. I left the world and felt a world, the bee loading its gloves with powder,
the albatross
wanting one thing from the sea. "Nothing can wreck our boat," said she. And when the water felt the glacier, the future held a present tense. The present held a future without cease. I'd like to invite Heather up to light our chalice.
Okay, I am lighting this chalice for change. Which, interestingly enough, I thought about lighting it for change before I discovered that the sermon topic today is change. So it must just be that time of year where we're thinking about change. And just to mention, I guess I'm hoping as your president to keep all of you inspired to think about change on an ongoing basis, about what we can be changing here at the CBUU and what changes you can bring, you know, to help with that communal change. And even if you can't make a big change, make a little change. Sometimes those little changes can be really exciting. Like one example for me is I am not changing jobs, but I finally am changing where I work. I get to work from home starting in just a few weeks, and I'm really excited about that. Another little change that is really a big change, I don't think we've announced this yet, that Emma is now our full-time minister starting May 1st.
At your service.
Starting May 1st for May and June. We just voted this at our last board meeting. I'm glad you all approved. That's good. Because we want all of you to come and vote to make this for a whole year of having Emma full-time. So if you can come to the annual meeting on May 19th and vote to extend Emma's contract a year at full-time, that would be great. And that'll help keep the change going here in a positive way at the CBUU. So I think that's enough for me. But think about change.
Thank you, Heather.
How it can be a good thing.
Thank you, Heather. It's uncomfortable, but it's often a good thing. As many of you are aware, Unitarian Universalism is a covenantal faith, and we make a covenant and a promise together to live in beloved and cooperative community. So with that on your hearts, I invite you to speak the words of our covenant. We gather together in the spirit of love. We seek to grow in wisdom, promote peace, and strive for social justice. We dedicate ourselves to kindness, understanding, and responsible actions so that we may grow in harmony with nature and the divine.
Well, I want to start this morning with a disclaimer. Usually when I do a service, the worship associate is somebody else on the committee. It's not usual that the minister is the worship associate. So thank you, Emma, for...
So bear with me as I fumble through the mic running.
Well,
I think maybe
she's at my, got my back if something happens. The impetus for this program, service this morning, we were talking about it at the Religious Services Committee meeting. And I said, we need to do an interactive service, you know, a Phil Donahue service. And the question came, who's Phil Donahue? I think as I look around, I think a lot of folks here know, but some people don't remember Phil Donahue. So... that's what we're going to do this morning, and I'll give you some ground rules. But I want to start with a small exercise. I want you to fold your hands. Which thumb is on top? Right hand, left hand? Now I want you to refold your hands, and I want you to put the opposite one on top. Okay. So what is it? What was your reaction?
Ew.
Oh, yeah. Give me some more adjectives. Give me some more adjectives. Weird, awkward. What else? I've been doing this exercise when I've been working with churches and other things for a long time. And the same reaction comes. Boy, that's awkward. All you did was refold your hands. But it feels awkward. It feels weird. So change is just changing the folding of your hands means a little bit of awkwardness and a little bit of uncomfortableness in some cases. In 6 weeks, Karen and I will have been married 54 years. We walked down the aisle in 1965, and since that time, a lot of changes have happened in our lives. And I'm sure that for a lot of you, it's the same thing. We were involved in the civil rights movement in the late 60s. We were really involved in the women's awareness movement in the middle 70s. We also were involved with the gay, at that time it was the gay and lesbian movement. Now it's the LGBTQ. I can't keep all the letters, the acronym straight. But so there were some attitudes. And part of that, for me, was the expectations that I had not only for myself, but also for the people that I was associating with. Part of it was a big change in language, particularly in the end of the 80s. Do you remember how many names we had for African Americans that were really not very pleasant? And for the Mexicans and for the Czechoslovakians and for the Bohemians and for all of those, the Italians, there was always some kind of a negative hitch, a negative word for describing the people in that situation. Throw in a couple of other things, but the thing that was really a change for me was, and it was a slow process, was 6 weeks before Clay died, I got a letter from John Cummins. Some of you know John Cummins. He was a minister at the First Universalist Church in Minneapolis. And he and Drew had an accident, and they had some other things happen to them, and I sent them a note telling them that we were thinking about them. And he wrote back a two-page letter because he knew what we were going through. But one thing that he wrote, and I want to read it to you, because it really had an impact on my becoming a non-Christian. Sometimes I think that there is a God which I doubt. Let me start again. Sometimes I think if there is a God which I doubt, he must be a son of a bitch to have created a world in which such monstrous things could happen and do happen every day to innocent, loving people. And that stuck. And I'm no longer a Christian. I don't believe in the saving power of Jesus Christ. That was a moment for me that really struck home. And so now what I want to do is I want you to tell me a time, and I want it to be the redacted version. I don't want it to be the UU version I was born in a log cabin. But I know that all of you have had some changes in your life. And think of one and then share it with us. And I'm going to start with one of the senior members. You're a little older than I am, Bob.
In the early 50s, I was 51 or two, a guy named Rocky Marciano took the heavyweight champion away from another guy. And a big Polish guy said, "Shit, I was hoping the white man would win for a change." He was an Italian.
Judy.
When President Kennedy was assassinated, my first thought after total shock was, please, don't let it have been a Jew who killed him.
So moments in your life when you felt a seismic shift of change of your personal beliefs and your affirmations. Nancy?
Hi, as many of you know, I had a neurological insult from a medication, and it turned out that I could no longer function as an RN anymore, and that was a deep, deep, deep loss. But it brought me to Iowa, and I didn't know anyone. It was very hard to make friends here because everybody lived here all their life. And it brought me to the UU Church, and where I found community and loving support. Was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. I didn't know that about you, Nancy.
So when I was in the service, young man, I would say unformed attitudes towards gays and lesbians just because I didn't know any. But had a senior chief, my boss, female, and kind of open secret, you know, it was don't ask, don't tell. But we knew she was gay. She knew that we knew, but nobody said anything. But somebody got picked up for drunk driving, and the next morning she came in, put her home phone number on this day before cell phones, put her home phone number on the board and said, hey, if anything happens, you call me before anybody else. And she displayed more balls than any male chief I ever worked for. And that really kind of made a seismic shift in my attitudes about people serving in the military.
Sounds like a shift about your perceptions of women and queer folk.
Well, anytime there's death, marriage, birth, those things are enormous change, and I'm not going to talk about that. There are enough new people here that don't know why we're here. When our daughter, Katie at the time, Catherine now, was two, our neighbor came over to our house and said, I've noticed you've had trouble getting out of the house on Sundays, and I'd like to take Katie to church with me. She was Baptist. And I said, I'm sorry, we're not Christian. That would not be appropriate. It was kind of the end of our neighbor relationship. And the next weekend, or I looked up in the Yellow Pages for Unitarian Universalist because I knew of this place. And that next weekend, we were here with our 7-month-old son, who's now 36, and our 2-year-old daughter, and have no regrets.
I guess you could say a major life-changing moment in our life, being Tina's and mine, was the day that I decided to become transgender. And it was a big decision, and I've not regretted it ever since. I've learned more about the life of the LGBTs, even more than I thought I knew. And come December the 13th, I'll celebrate 2 years, and I am very happy.
I, at the age of 18, this little farm boy from Kentucky went to Baltimore College, to Johns Hopkins, and over the next 3 years, I learned what the inner city was. I learned about the issues of poverty, of race. You know, the year before, I couldn't have told you what the inner city was. And I think those changes and that education were as important in many ways as the formal education I received over the 4 years I was there.
Not surprisingly, it was the same year for me, 1963 in Memphis, Tennessee. It was my freshman year in college, and I was starting to ask a whole lot of questions, and it was the end of Fraternity Rush, and it was typical then for Sunday morning after Fraternity Rush for the brothers to take their dates and go to church at this, what I would call a country club Presbyterian church. And so I had a date with one of them, and we went to this great big enormous church that had a bowling alley and swimming pool and everything attached to it. And we were going in the front doors, and I saw a friend of my brother's who'd gone to the same school. This is getting to be a UU story. I'm sorry. I'll try to shorten it. I knew him a little bit, and admired him, but he was in front of the church along with some other friends of his and a number of African-American people, and it was raining outside, and they were not allowed to come into the church. So I went into the church and sat in about the third row and worshiped, and that was the last time I was in a Presbyterian or Christian church for a very long time. And not to slander all churches, but it was a turning point for me.
I was raised Catholic. From a young age, I went to church every Sunday with my grandparents and religion class every Wednesday night. And when I realized as a teenager that I was a lesbian, I was told by the pastor and the deacon that I would be going to hell and I didn't belong in their church, which was really traumatic for me as a teenager to hear from two people I really looked up to and respected. So I left the church and didn't really have any type of community for a long time. And then a few years back, I started attending a Methodist church, which I thought was a little bit more progressive, and then come to find out they are not after the most recent vote and some of the comments by the pastor at that church, who I really also respected. So I just kind of had decided that I just didn't need church in my life, and I'm really happy to have found the UU because it feels like a place that I belong. So thank you.
Sherry. Karen?
It's sort of about a change of perspective, and not all that profound, but anyway, I was 31 years old when I first moved, when I moved to Iowa, and it was like my first sort of career full-time job, and I guess I wasn't really thinking about myself as all that grown up at that point, even though I was 31, and several people making conversation ask me, do you have a family? And I would be like, well, my parents live in New York. About the third or fourth time it dawned on me, oh, they mean, do I have children? Do I, like, oh, I guess I could do that. But it was just funny. It totally didn't dawn on me when they said, do you have a family, that might, like, have you created a family, you know, rather than were you born into a family?
Kind of interestingly, on that note, when I moved to Iowa about 4 years ago, I had been living on the East Coast, mostly in cities, around mostly queer, pretty alternative radical folk. And I noticed this really bizarre thing. When I got to Iowa, people didn't ask me, are you married? Do you have kids? They would ask me, what's your husband's name and how many children do you have? And so it was when I moved to Iowa and I was getting that question over and over and over again that I thought to myself, I think it's time to really publicly come out. Yeah.
When I was about 9 years old, my parents left the Methodist church, which was the best thing that ever happened to me, because they did not believe in the messages. They said, we think everybody is a good person inside. We don't believe in that. And they went into metaphysics, and we've been members of the Unity Center of Cedar Rapids for over 30 years. And when my mother passed away at her service, and the minister was talking about her, she always said, I'm really proud that I am not a Christian and my children are not either. And what that taught me was not to be afraid in the face of my relatives or my friends or anyone else to say, this is not something that I believe in. And so they led by example by saying, don't be afraid to stand up for what you really believe in.
Don't be afraid. Thank you, Karen.
Well, I've said things like many years that I had switched when I was in this Methodist college, Cornell College, to going to the Quaker services. And then, of course, Nancy Gross Langewater told me I talked too much to be a Quaker. I should be a Unitarian. So then years, so, and that was true. And, you know, but I did like the quiet services. And Tom said, you could be quiet for 45 minutes. I said, yeah. Anyway, so then later, you know, I never had publicly, like you said, never publicly said anything. And I was working, this would have been in the 70s. You know, I was working as a cocktail lounge pianist at the Rhineland House restaurant in Charlotte, and the owner had a German wife. He was Greek. and she made the cake. She made the German chocolate cake. Anyway, and so he's standing there, and he's asking me, he says, well, do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? And I said, yes, but who cares?
Too talkative to be a Quaker? Have you considered Unitarian Universalism? Here's Kelsey.
We kind of moved in the direction. Oh, okay,
yeah. Sorry. It takes me a while to get my courage up. I have a lot of them, but my very first one, my very first pivotal moment that led me up to be who I am, everything I am, was about a year after I went blind. I'd been really angry in this horrible, angry child. And I met my first blind person, and she did nothing but joke about her blindness. And I realized that there was two paths in life that I could walk. I could either walk the negative one and hate everybody and everything, or I could walk the positive path and end up being okay with being blind and moving on. So I took the positive path, and it's just kind of, it was a very pivotal moment in my life to realize that there was two paths.
Good for you.
Kelsey, you bring light and love to our congregation every day. We have one more from Ruth, and then Mr. Miller, it is 3:minutes to 11. Well, we got to change. We haven't touched expectations or tolerance.
The last time we did this, a buzzer went off, and you just ignored it.
I did. It's true. We may start to lose people. We can't stop. Okay, we can keep going. Ruth?
Oh, shit.
All the time growing up in Presbyterian church, it didn't make sense to me, but I kept trying to make it make sense. And, sometime in the 60s, when the Passover plot that was written by a Jewish biblical scholar came out, I thought, oh, hey, this is the first time I ever knew that those stories were older than the New Testament.
All right, Mr. Miller, what's next?
Okay, you're all right. A couple things as we end. The other thing that Emma and I talked about when we put this thing together, we UUs are kind of change snobs. By that I mean, you know, the list that I went through at the beginning and all of those kinds of things. We kind of pride ourselves, and we like the change. And we change first, and we have to provide a place and an option for that. And so my challenge to all of us is that not only are we changing and acknowledging that, but the way we deal with other people who don't believe the same way we do.
Great.
So I think we'll do what we did when John and I had our first conversational sermon together that had three different topics, and then we said we'll have to do it again. So I think we've got through change, and we will reconvene at a TBA date to cover expectations, and then probably again to cover tolerance, because that's how we work. Closing words this morning, our poem 1292 from Emily Dickinson. In this short life that only lasts an hour, how much, how little is within our power. Blessed be, and go now in peace. Thank you.